Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's about 7 minutes after the 11 p.m. hour, and to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf here. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
This
Glad
is the
to be here.
WGN Radio Theater Program 344 in the series. It's December 15th. We're closing in on Christmas here, Lisa.
I know. I'm going
to
leave
that?
You for that next weekend.
I'm heartbroken.
Be a little snowbird next weekend.
Heartbroken.
You'll be okay. I will be back.
Our producer, Shante Garth, is in the booth, and we're going to play an hour-long radio broadcast of the Theater Guild on the Air. This aired back in 1950 on Christmas Eve, December 24th, David Copperfield, and it stars, are you ready for this? Boris Karloff and Richard Burton. Yes, the Richard Burton, who was married for a long time, I think twice, to Elizabeth Taylor. Very rare radio performance by Richard Burton. You're going to like that. And then it's The Roy Rogers Show from Christmas of 1952. So we have a great lineup tonight here on the WGN Radio Theater. And it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride. So we're going to play our Cat's Pride game. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yes. The celebrity for this hour will be Gene Hackman.
Oh, yeah.
Good one. And the prize will be a Lou Malnati's gift certificate.
Ooh,
the highly coveted
really?
Pizza.
Wow. We're
That's a good
getting
one.
Hungry just thinking about it.
I know.
It.
But make sure to remember we have a text in line, 312-981-7200, same as our call-in line. And we have a Facebook page, so check it out. Make sure to like us. And that's a great way to communicate with us as well.
All right, but the number to call if you want to play, and what number would you like? What
we'll take caller 6 and the number 312-981-7200.
312-981-7200. Call now, play the game live on the air. We'll be right back.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
And we've got Peggy on the phone. Hey, Peggy.
Yes.
Yeah, Peggy.
Yes. Here I-
Hi, how
Here
are
I
you?
Oh, this is going to be fun. I know probably just nothing about Gene Hackman.
Oh, that's okay. We'll make it easy on you. Either way, you're a winner, so it's all good.
Well, I have a good story for you when you finish.
Okay. All right. We'll start. Ready?
Okay.
Okay. First, he was considered to play the part of Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
Why is there an echo? You hear that echo?
I do.
Is that, Shante, is that because maybe... Peggy's radio is up high or something like that? Or is that
no,
something?
I think it's real. I think he probably would have, he could have played the part.
All right, Carl, what do you think?
Hannibal Lecter.
He was considered to play the part of Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs.
I'm going
to
say ridiculous.
Well, Peggy, you are absolutely right. It is real.
Stink at this game.
See, you know more than you think. All right, number two. When he was 16 years old, he lied about his age in order to join the Marines. Is that real or ridiculous, Peggy?
You know, wait a second. I got that one wrong, right?
Yeah, but this is all about Peggy.
I have no idea, but Gene Hackman is the kind of guy that... No, I don't think he did it.
You're going to say ridiculous?
Ridiculous.
All right, Carl.
I say ridiculous.
It is real. That is absolutely true. Carl, you're doing great. At least you have one right so far.
I literally stink at this game.
All right, last but not least, he was the first choice to play character Mike Brady on The Brady Bunch. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
I think it's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
That is real.
Oh.
That is absolutely real. Carl,
you
got...
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you.
Those are
you
great
got,
ones. You,
Carl, gosh, you got 0 out of 3. Peggy, you got one right. And because of that, you have won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnatis.com.
Well, I have one for you.
Sure.
You know how they say you have to lie, cheat, steal, and kill your grandmother for money.
Right.
In Entrepreneur Magazine for September, they had the newest millionaires.
Yes.
The youngest was I on one there? Was, the youngest one was 13 years old. She was a seventh grader. And you know how she made her millions?
How?
Oh, no.
Sugar-free lollipops.
Get out of here. Wow.
That's
well,
a real ridiculous question.
That's right.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. True. Well, now we've learned something. But thank you so much for calling.
You
are a winner.
Way
and
to
enjoy
go.
Your pizza.
You know what?
What?
I stink at this game.
Well, I no comment.
I'm
to
on
that.
A roll. I've got all three wrong.
You did really well.
Ay.
Next time, next hour, you've got another chance to
well,
redeem yourself.
You know what we do have, though, folks? We have a hour-long broadcast of the Theater Guild on the Air. This was also known as the United States Steel Hour. And this was a drama, came to radio in 1945. These were, as I say, hour-long dramas, and they feature the greatest names from stage and screen in dramatizations of the greatest novels, plays, and films in history. Now, these were huge production budgets, Lisa. Back then, $10,000 to $15,000 per hour. I mean, we're talking major bucks back in 1945. It was heard first on ABC, then later on NBC. United States Steel was the sponsor, so they could probably afford it. I mean, United States Steel, they had a few shekels. The host was Roger Pryor, but then there were other hosts like Walter Houston, Joseph Cotton, and E.G. Marshall. You know, later E.G. Marshall was the host of the Mystery Theater, the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. It lasted on radio till 1953, and it made a transition to television. Well, back on Christmas Eve of 1950, you know what show they aired? David Copperfield.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have
Here
for
we
you
go.
Tonight. Boris Karloff stars along with Richard Burton in this hour-long presentation. Now, we'll break this up into four parts. We'll have a half hour. We're going to have a quarter hour in this hour right now before the news, and we'll have another quarter hour and then two more quarter hours in our next hour. Then a little later, we'll play the Roy Rogers Show. So let's tune this in. Here's part one now of David Copperfield on the Theater Guild on the Air.
The Theater Guild on the Air presents David Copperfield, offered by the United States Steel Hour. David Copperfield by Charles Dickens, starring Boris Karloff, Flora Robson, Cyril Richard, Hugh Williams, and Richard Burton. Helping to build a better America through better steels and products of steel is the job of the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel. Look for our trademark, USS, on any steel product. It's your guide to quality steel. And now, as the lights go down at the Belasco Theater in New York, here speaking for the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers, is Roger Pryor with a word about our play and players.
Tonight, for this Christmas Eve, the Theater Guild on the Air brings you David Copperfield, the best loved of Charles Dickens' immortal novels, played for you by a brilliant all-star cast from Broadway's leading stage successes. As Uriah Heep, you'll hear Boris Karloff, now starring in Peter Pan. As Aunt Betsy Trotwood, Flora Robson, star of Black Chiffon. Our Mr. Micawber is Cyril Richard, star of The Relapse, and Hugh Williams, star of The Cocktail Party, is Mr. Wickfield. Richard Burton of The Ladies Not for Burning is David Copperfield, who tells us his own story. Our featured players are Isabel Elsom of The Curious Savage as Peggotty, Brenda Forbes of Ring Around the Moon as Mrs. Micawber, and David Cole of The Innocents, who plays David as a boy. We raise the curtain now on David Copperfield, adapted for radio by Robert Anderson and directed by Homer Fickett.
whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my own life, or whether that station will be held by anybody else, these pages must show. To begin my life with the beginning of my life, I record that I was born, as I've been informed and believed, on a Friday at 12 o'clock at night. It was remarked that the clock began to strike and I to cry simultaneously. To the enormous disappointment of my great aunt, Betsy Trotwood, I was born a boy and therefore was named not Betsy Trotwood Copperfield, but in memory of my recently deceased father, David Copperfield. My first years were happy ones, presided over by my child of a mother with her pretty hair and youthful shape, and by Peggotty, our maid, who had no shape at all, and whose buttons popped off her dress at the slightest exertion.
Come along, Davy, and dance with Davy, with Peggotty and me.
Peggotty will lose her buttons, Mother.
Lor, young Davy's right.
Mrs. Well, then she'll just have to pop them. Here we go, round and round and round.
But the happiness was abruptly ended by the gentleman with the black whiskers whom my mother married in my ninth year, Mr. Edward Murdstone, who brought into our carefree home his tyrannical doctrine of firmness.
Now, Clara, be firm with the boy. Either he knows his lessons or he does not know them.
I'm afraid he does not know them, do you, Davy?
I can do them when it's just you here, Mother, but not when...
And what do you mean by that, I'd like to know?
Edward, you must give him time to get accustomed to you and your manner.
Very well. Master David, I'll give you a sum to do.
Please say it slowly, sir.
Why, of course. If I go into a cheesemonger shop and buy 5,000 double Gloucester cheeses at fourpence halfpenny each, present payment, and then I buy...
I can't do it. I can't.
You won't do it, you mean. You're obstinate.
Please, Edward.
Come along with me. Come along.
Where are you taking him?
I tell you, Clara, I have often been flogged myself. Get in there, David.
Please don't. Please don't whip him.
Mr. Murdstone, sir, pray don't beat me. I've tried.
Have you indeed? Well, then, try that.
Oh,
and
oh,
that. And... Oh, you bite, do you? I'll show you what we do to animals that bite.
Oh, oh, oh!
For having bitten Mr. Murdstone's hand, I was sent away, over my mother's protests, sent away to school, where my chief humiliation was that upon arrival, the headmaster, Mr. Creakle, who never spoke above a whisper, said to me,
"Turn around, young man."
What are you doing, Mr. Creakle?
I'm pinning a sign on your back, by order of Mr. Murdstone.
Pray, sir, what kind of sign?
A sign to warn the other boys what kind of a wretch you are.
What does the sign say, if you please, sir?
It says, "Beware this boy. He bites."
Not long after my humiliation at Mr. Creakle's school, I was called back to my home. My mother was ill, her gentle spirit broken by Mr. Murdstone. I had been home a few days when one night Peggotty came to my room.
Davy, are you asleep?
What's the matter, Peggotty?
Oh, my poor precious Davy.
Is it Mama, Peggotty?
Aye.
Does she want me?
She wanted you, and he wouldn't let you come to her.
I'll go to her now.
No, David, no. Come here.
Peggotty, Mama isn't worse, is she?
Yes. My precious little Davy.
Much worse?
Yes.
Peggotty, Mama's dead? Mama's dead?
Now, listen to me, David. I have made arrangements for you to go to London to be employed by Murdstone and Grinby in the wine trade.
But, Mr. Murdstone, the boy is barely 10 years old and his mother dead.
Peggotty, only... if you please. If he has to fight his way in this world, he might as well start as young as possible. Don't you agree, David?
Yes, sir.
Very well. You must live entirely on what you earn. And now you will leave tomorrow morning. The cartman, Barkis, will fetch you and take you to London, where you will lodge with Mr. and Mrs. Wilkins Micawber.
Mr. Barkis, will you have another piece of cake?
You'd better save some for when you get to London.
Oh, no. They're for the trip.
Did she make them now, the cakes?
Peggotty, do you mean, sir?
Ah, her that's seen you all.
Oh, yes. She makes all our pastry and does all our cooking.
Does she, though? No sweethearts, I believe. No person walks with her.
Oh, no. She's never had a sweetheart.
Didn't she, though? So she makes all the apple pasties and does all the cooking, does she?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what. Perhaps you might be writing to her?
Oh, yes, I will be.
If you was writing to her, perhaps you'd recollect to say, Barkis is willing, would you?
Is that all the message?
Yes, that's all. Just Barkis is willing.
I arrived in London in the afternoon and was already at work washing, corking, and labelling wine bottles in the rat-infested warehouse of Murdstone and Grinby, when, looking up, I saw coming towards me a stranger. He was a jaunty, stoutish, middle-aged person in a brown coat and black tights and shoes, with no more hair on his head than there is upon an egg.
Do I have the pleasure of addressing Master Copperfield?
Why, yes, sir.
I am that person at whose house you are to reside during your stay in London. In short, I am Mr. Wilkins Micawber.
Oh, Mr. Micawber.
And the impression that your peregrinations in this metropolis have not as yet been extensive, and that you might have some difficulty in penetrating the arcana of the modern Babylon, in short, that you might lose yourself, I should be happy to call this evening and install you in the knowledge of the nearest way home.
As we reached home that evening, it soon was clear to me that Mr. Micawber owed money to almost every tradesman in London.
Hurry up, Micawber!
Gentlemen, blood cannot be obtained from a stone. Neither can anything on account be obtained at the present from Wilkins Micawber. In short, you are wasting your time. In short, good day. Get inside, Master Copperfield.
Mr. Micawber, I was worried for you.
Ah, my darling, Emma.
Mr. Micawber, no matter what may come, I will never desert you.
Oh, I'm deeply touched, my dear. Master Copperfield, may I present the partner of my joys and sorrows, the bosom of my affections, in short, Mrs. Micawber.
How much I suffered as a child of 10, working as a labouring hind in the dregs of London, is beyond my power to tell. With my meagre earnings, I could afford only a penny loaf and a pennyworth of milk for breakfast, and often had no dinner at all. My only real happiness came with the Micawbers.
Master Copperfield, I never thought before I was married to Mr. Micawber, when I lived with Papa and Mama, that I should ever find it necessary to take a lodger.
Are your Mama and Papa still alive, Mrs. Micawber?
Her Mama departed this life before my difficulties commenced. Her Papa lived to bail me out of jail several times and then expired, regretted by a numerous circle.
The twins want their supper.
Oh, and so do we, and so do we.
There's nothing in the house but a crust of bread and a piece of cheese.
Oh.
Perhaps, Master Copperfield.
I think I could just manage to loan you a shilling.
Oh, no, no, my dear Master Copperfield. But you could render us another kind of service, if you will. I've a few of Mama's teaspoons I haven't pawned yet.
Oh, Emma, please.
Mr. Micawber's feelings would never allow him to dispose of them. And I'm tied down with the twins just now. I wonder if you would see what you could get for them.
Why, of course, ma'am. Though I wish you'd accept a shilling from me.
Oh, not just now, Copperfield, thank you.
Mr. Micawber, what do you do? I mean, I have not been able to learn. What is your work?
Me work? Why, at the moment, I'm engaged in keeping myself in readiness in case anything should turn up.
All right, that's the first portion of David Copperfield from December 24th, 1950, on the Theater Guild on the Air, starring Boris Karloff along with Richard Burton and other great actors from New York as well, as heard on NBC. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David Jennings. It is 11:36 here on the WGN Radio Theater. Every Saturday and Sunday, Lisa Wolf and I are here playing all your favorite classic radio shows. The Shadow, Jack Benny, Gunsmoke, Have Gun Will Travel, Boston Blackie, Sam Spade, Fibber McGee and Molly, The Great Gildersleeve, Our Miss Brooks, so many more. We have them for you every Saturday and Sunday night, beginning at 11 p.m. right here on the greatest radio station in the world, WGN. And we just came from quite the soiree, Lisa, did we not?
Oh, we did.
We just at...
had a little WGN party. Maybe I'll post the picture.
Every year, Dave Plyer and his wife, Lori, have an incredible Christmas party at his beautiful home, and we are always invited. I don't know why he keeps inviting me back.
I don't know.
I eat all the food.
Probably
I'm just going around.
Probably because you bring nice presents.
Eating and eating and eating. But no, it was a lot of fun.
I'm going to post a picture of the WGN crew that I could round up for the photo.
Yeah.
So I'll post it right now on our WGN page. You can check it out. Our WGN Radio Theater page.
We could have stayed longer. It's still going on strong right now.
That's why Dave Plyer's not going to be in tonight. We've got Jerry Nunn and Mark Carman filling in for Dave Plyer tonight.
Tonight at 2 o'clock. We had to leave early because we have a radio show to do live here, right, Lisa?
Well, I'd much rather be here. We had our fun, and now it's time to have some more fun.
Yeah, I stuffed my face with a bunch of good food.
I
had some good food there.
he does a great party.
Wow, what a party. All right, right now it's time for the second portion of the Theater Guild on the Air.
But in the months that followed, nothing did turn up for Micawber. Except eventually the constable, who took him off to debtor's prison. One night, I went to the prison to talk with Mr. Micawber. I found Mrs. Micawber and the twins visiting him.
You have come just in time for good news, Master Copperfield.
What is that, Mrs. Micawber?
Micawber's to be set free in 6 weeks.
And then I have no doubt I shall begin to be beforehand with the world and live in a perfectly new manner, if in short anything turns up.
What will you do when you are free of prison?
Well, I'm journeying into the country where dear Emma's family have some influence.
And do you go with him too, Mrs. Micawber?
I never will desert Mr. Micawber. He has his faults. I do not deny that he is improvident. I do not deny that he has kept me in the dark as to his resources and his liabilities. But I never will desert Mr. Micawber.
There, Emma, me angel. What's the matter?
I never will desert you, Micawber.
Oh, me life, I'm perfectly aware of it. Now, there.
Mr. Micawber?
Yes, Copperfield?
Since you are going away, I have thought that perhaps I would go away, too, to my great-aunt's cottage in Dover.
Oh, what is this great-aunt's name?
Miss Betsy Trotwood.
She's not in my circle of acquaintances. Well then, Copperfield, I've nothing to bestow upon you at parting but advice. And that advice is never to do tomorrow what you can do today. Procrastination is the thief of time. Collar him.
I shall try my best, sir.
My other advice. Annual income, £20. Annual expenditure, £19.19. Result, happiness. Annual income, £20. Annual expenditure, £20 plus sixpence. Result, misery. The blossom is blighted. The leaf is withered. The god of day goes down upon the dreary scene. And in short, you're flawed forever, as I am. And so, Copperfield, farewell.
The Dover Road is a beautiful road, but not to a penniless little boy who must trudge every inch on foot. Each milestone might well have been my gravestone, except that I was determined to reach my great-aunt Betsy Trotwood's cottage in Dover. More dead than alive, I at last knocked feebly on her door.
Hello? What's this? Go away! Go along! No boys here!
If you please, Mum.
You're one of those miserable boys that rides the donkeys across my garden. Go along.
If you please, Aunt.
People are always riding donkeys through my garden.
If you please, Aunt, I am your nephew.
Aunt! Mercy on us. Hold me up, somebody. Help me. Janet! Janet!
Please, Aunt. It's the truth.
What's the matter, Miss Trotwood? Donkeys?
Not donkeys. This boy.
I am David Copperfield of Blunderstone, where you came on the night when I was born and saw my dear mamma.
This is the boy that should have been a girl.
Since my mamma died, I have been taught nothing and thrown upon myself and put to work not fit for me. And so I've run away to you from London.
Oh, mercy on us, mercy on us, the poor boy. What shall we do, Janet?
Wash him and put him to bed.
Exactly so, a brilliant suggestion. Exactly so.
My aunt wrote to Mr. Murdstone to pair a call so that they might decide what was to become of me.
I am here, Miss Trotwood, to take David back, to dispose of him as I think proper.
To dispose of him? What a way to talk of a child.
I am here to take him away. If he is not ready to go, my doors are shut against him henceforth.
Are they now?
Yes.
Then mine shall be open to him.
And what do you intend to do with the wretch?
I shall send him to school in Canterbury, where he can live with my good friend and lawyer, Mr. Wickfield, finest man I know.
Miss Trotwood,
You may go when you like, Mr. Murdstone. And in leaving, mind you don't ride your donkey through my garden.
And so my good Aunt Betsy sent me off to Canterbury to school, but not before giving me some advice, which I've always tried to heed.
Remember, David, never be mean in anything. Never be false, never be cruel. Avoid these three vices, and I can always be hopeful for you.
The great bells of the cathedral at Canterbury were ringing as I arrived at the home of Mr. Wickfield, with whom I was to stay. He came towards me, a fine, generous, hearty man.
Master Copperfield, I am delighted to welcome you to my home.
How do you do, Mr. Wickfield? My Aunt Betsy sends her regards.
Thank you, David. And now I should like to present to you my little housekeeper and beloved daughter, Agnes.
How do you do, David? How do you do, Agnes?
Agnes has presided over my household since her dear mother died.
Papa.
Agnes knows. It saddens me to talk of my departed wife. And here comes the third member of our household, my trusted law clerk, Uriah Heep.
How Mr. Wickfield, sir. I'm far too humble to be included as one of your household. Far too humble.
Oh, Uriah, that's rubbish. Shake hands with Master Copperfield.
Oh, indeed, if he'll be so kind as to give me his hand. There. You see how he withdraws his hand? It's unpleasant for him to shake hands with such an humble person.
Oh, no, sir. It's not that.
Papa, shall I show David his room?
Yes, my dear. And Uriah, take Master Copperfield's things for him. They're too heavy for him to handle alone.
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Wickfield, sir. It'll be my pleasure.
Mr. Wickfield?
Yes, David?
Uriah's hand. It's cold and bony, like a skeleton.
Thus was I welcomed into the Wickfield household, as a son and as a brother. A warm, friendly household, over which Uriah Heep seemed to hover like some great, evil bat. Innocent as I was, even at the age of 11, I think I sensed his hypocrisy.
You're working late tonight, Uriah.
Ah, Master Copperfield, like you, I'm studying. I'm improving my legal knowledge.
I suppose you are quite a great lawyer.
Me, Master Copperfield? Oh, no, I'm a very humble person. But I've much to be thankful for in living with Mr. Wickfield. for it's Mr. Wickfield's intentions to give me me articles, which would otherwise not lie within the humble means of mother and self.
Perhaps you'll be a partner in Mr. Wickfield's business one of these days, and it'll be Wickfield and Heap.
Oh, no, Master Copperfield, I'm much too humble for that.
You two having a pleasant talk?
Oh, yes, Mr. Wickfield, sir, very pleasant.
I saw the light in here, and I wanted to make sure that you understood what work you are to do tomorrow.
I think I do, sir.
You have the routine accounts to draw up, but the most important thing is to make a report to Miss Trotwood of how we are handling her investment.
Oh, yes, sir, that's what I understood.
Good night, then. Good night, David.
Good night, sir.
Oh, a most excellent man.
Do you find studying the law easy, Uriah?
It's hard for me sometimes, but I don't know what it might be to a gifted person. There are Latin terms that are trying to a reader of my humble attainments.
Well, I could teach you Latin as I learn it.
Oh, thank you, Master Copperfield. I'm sure it's very kind of you to offer, but I'm much too humble to accept it.
Oh, that's nonsense, Uriah.
Oh, no, sir. There are people enough to tread upon me in my lowly state without me doing outrage to their feelings by possessing learning. Learning ain't for me. A person like myself had better not aspire. If he's to get on in life, Master Copperfield, he must get on humbly.
And so passed my school days. Days of happiness. Days with Agnes, my counselor and friend. Suddenly, they were over. And I was 17 and bidding Agnes goodbye before I left for London to seek my fortune.
We'll miss you, David, when you go away. The house will not be like itself.
Nor shall I be like myself, dear Agnes, without you. I seem to lack my right hand when I miss you, dear sister.
Dear sister?
Yes, for you've guided me like a sister. You mind my calling you that?
No, I don't mind. Although I wish...
What, Agnes?
Nothing, David. You may call me sister, if that's how you feel towards me.
Oh, I do. And even though I'm in London, I shall continue to confide in you as a sister. Whenever I fall into trouble, or when I fall in love in earnest, I shall always tell you.
And I shall be waiting to listen.
I wonder that you are not in love in earnest by this time, Agnes.
Perhaps I am.
But you can't be. There is no one hereabouts deserves to love you.
I did not say that he loved me.
You are teasing me with riddles, Agnes. Just mind you don't marry someone without my consent.
I promise you, I shall marry no one unless it is someone you approve of.
Goodbye, Agnes. Will I see you in London?
Yes, David, from time to time. So that you may tell me when you fall in love. In earnest.
You are listening to David Copperfield, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of David Copperfield, starring Boris Karloff as Uriah Heep, Flora Robson as Betsy Trotwood, Cyril Richard as Mr. Micawber, Hugh Williams as Mr. Wickfield, and Richard Burton as David.
I had been in London barely a month when I had need of Agnes, but I'd fallen in love in earnest. Mr. Spenlow, under whom I was training for the law, had taken me to his house for a Saturday and Sunday. He sent me on into the house alone, and there, standing in the hall with a little dog clutched in her arms, was an apparition of brown curls, blue ribbon, and frilly white lace.
You must be Mr. Copperfield. I'm Dora Spenlow.
She may have said more, but I didn't hear it. All was over in a moment. I'd fulfilled my destiny. I loved Dora Spenlow to distraction. I was gone headlong before I'd sense to say a word to her. It was not until the next morning, when we met in the garden, that I spoke to her.
Good morning, Mr. Copperfield.
You are out early, Miss Spenlow.
My governess is so stupid. She talks such nonsense about it being necessary for the day to be aired before I come out. Aired? Besides, it's the brightest time in the whole day, don't you think so?
It's very bright for me now, though it had been very dark to me a minute ago.
Do you mean a compliment? Or that the weather has really changed, Mr. Copperfield?
Well,
Here's Jip. Jip has saved you more embarrassment, Mr. Copperfield, haven't you, Jip? Why is there all this talk about my needing a governess to protect me, when little Jip here can protect me a great deal better, can't you?
He's a very nice little dog.
He's much better than a cross old governess who follows us about and tries to teach us sums and all sorts of practical things.
Do you suppose he'd allow me to pet him?
I do believe Jip is jealous of you, Mr. Copperfield. Jip, are you jealous of Mr. Copperfield?
All right, that's another portion of the Theater Guild on the Air with David Copperfield, starring Boris Karloff, along with Richard Burton from 1950, as heard on NBC. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. All right, well, we have a few minutes before the top of the hour. I want to talk a little bit about the Classic Radio Club. You know, Lisa, since we started the Classic Radio Club, we have been getting, and I'm talking about just tons and tons of emails and letters from people saying how much they enjoy the 10 shows they get each month. They get 10 classic radio shows every single month, and you can get the shows on 5 CDs, or you can have them digitally sent to you. And I also write very copious liner notes and detailed history and fun facts about every show. But people have been writing in, and so we are going to now, within the next couple of days, have a section on the website at classicradioclub.com, a section on the website where you can click and read what people are saying about being a member in the club. Really nice. I mean, these are people are just sending in letters and talking about the quality of these classic radio shows and how it brings back a flood of memories from their childhood and how they discovered the club and the 10 shows every month that they're getting. And I'm very appreciative of people emailing in their comments. And folks, if you are a member of the club, please email me. Just go to the website. My email is there. If anyone listening here is a member of the Classic Radio Club and wants to send me an email about their experience with being a member, we'd love to post your email.
I was going to add to that, not only do you want to post it, but you do appreciate the comments. For example, what you learned when you started the club was that some people preferred the digital option.
Right.
So because of that and because of the feedback that you received, you decided to add that as an option. So you're certainly open to listening to everybody's comments, ideas, suggestions, and that just makes the club that much better.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have been saying, hey, can we get more than 10 shows every month? But the thing is, I'm trying to keep it where it's very affordable for just about anybody. You can join the digital part of the club for $4.99 for the first month and only $9.99 thereafter. So every month you'll get 10 shows emailed to you.
And of course there's no shipping charges.
Yeah,
so,
join the digital option.
It's a great way to go.
No shipping at all. And then if you get the CDs, of course there's costs in producing those CDs. We actually have them replicated, not burned CDs. These are replicated at a replication company in Minneapolis, Minnesota. They're 5 CDs with 10 shows in a really nice color collector case, and that is sent out to people every single month. So to learn more about the Classic Radio Club, I think you will really enjoy being a member, just like all these people that are sending in their comments. And we do urge you to send in yours if you are a member of the club, and just read about it. We'll have it up on the website. I sent all of these, as had a ton of emails to Rob, my webmaster, and he's going to put them up on the site. So check that out, what people are saying. Email me if you are a member. And to learn all about the Classic Radio Club, just go to classicradioclub.com. And next, let's see. When is Dan Jaffe and Dave Wieske coming? Pretty soon, right?
I
think next week, maybe.
I'm not sure.
To give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter.
Yeah, that would make sense. I guess next Sunday I won't be here, but somehow you'll get through it without me.
So, folks, if you have not sent in your picture of your kitty cat, do that this week, because you will be automatically entered to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Just send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. catspridephoto@gmail.com. And we need your cat's name and your name and your city and state, right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay.
Easy peasy.
In our next hour, we'll have the concluding half hour of David Copperfield, starring Boris Karloff, along with Richard Burton, from Christmas Eve of 1950. After that, we will have the Roy Rogers Show from 1952, a show called The Night Before Christmas. And that's exactly what we're going to listen to, with Roy Rogers, Dale Evans, and Pat Brady, and the whole gang on the Roy Rogers Show. But first, we're going to have the news.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. It is 12:07. Thank you, David Jennings. And we have more classic radio shows for you. In fact, we have the conclusion in this hour of this hour-long broadcast of David Copperfield on the Theater Guild on the Air. We'll have part three of the four parts coming your way in just a few minutes. And then we'll have the Roy Rogers Show in hour three. But right now it's time to play our game, right, Lisa?
Yes. Is it real or is it ridiculous? Sponsored by Cat's Pride. And the celebrity is Jodie Foster.
Okay.
Okay, maybe you can redeem yourself this hour.
I hope so. I'm on a roll.
You're doing really well. Yeah, and the prize will be the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers.
So it's a good one. Very good. Call us right now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What caller would you like?
Lucky caller number five.
Number five. Call now. We'll play the game right after these words.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
We have Nancy on the phone to play with us. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you so much for calling in and playing the game. I'm going to brave it with Carl here. So that takes a lot of bravery.
Mm. And I just want to say I love your show, every one of them. I listen all the time.
Aw, thank you so much.
Is this the first time that you've called in or gotten through?
Yes, it's the first time I've gotten through. I've called multiple times.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so glad you got through. Either way, you're a winner. We'll see how you can do with little Jodie Foster, okay?
Here we go.
Okay.
Jodie Foster graduated from Harvard with a degree in law. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
I think it's real.
Hmm, really? Boy, she said that with such conviction, you know? I'll have to go with Nancy on that one.
I'm so sorry, Carl. You really, and I'm so sorry, Nancy. She is really bright. She did go to Yale, and she graduated with a degree in literature.
Mm.
So not quite, but close.
Kept my streak going.
Okay, number two. She appeared as a waitress in the movie 1976 movie Taxi Driver. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
That's ridiculous.
Well, Lisa, I'm going to have to tell you something here. She is in the movie Taxi Driver, but she doesn't play a waitress. So, I'm not sure.
Did she appear as a waitress in the movie Taxi Driver?
Okay,
that's the comment.
Answer, did she play a waitress? No, she did not.
So you're saying that's ridiculous.
She played a lady of the night.
That is ridiculous. She played a prostitute. You can call her what you will. You got one right.
Oh, yeah.
You both got it right, Carl. Okay, number three.
See, she's very tricky, this Lisa.
Well, you got to be tricky around here.
Very tricky.
Got to be tricky. Jodie Foster began her professional career by appearing in the Courtship of Eddie's Father TV series in 1969. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
I think that's real.
I do, too. I think it's real.
I am so sorry, both of you. She actually started in commercials in 68 and then Mayberry RFD in 1968 as well.
Gosh.
Now, that wasn't tricky. That was just plain wrong.
You know what, Nancy? Out of six questions, I've gotten five wrong.
That is true. But you know what, Nancy?
I stink.
You got one right, and that's all that counts here. Either way, no matter what, you're the winner here. You've got the desktop indoor weather station. It is brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-Minute Man. You can give them a call at 855-955-HVAC. Nancy, you're a good sport, and thank you so much for calling, and I'm so glad you got through tonight.
Thank you, and you guys are great. Have a great holiday.
Thanks,
thank you, Nancy.
You too. Appreciate you. All right. Well, Nancy's a big winner.
I feel like,
what's
wrong, you got five
me?
Out of six wrong.
Gosh.
I feel like if you just guessed, you'd do better than that,
I know,
right?
It's 50-50 if I just guess.
Maybe well, that's what you should
I
do.
I think you're getting better at this, and you're being
right?
trickier, and you're fooling me.
I think I was good at this from the start, but
you
call it as you will.
I think you're getting better at it.
It's impossible.
All right. Well, we're enjoying a very fun episode of Theater Guild on the Air. And I love the fact that Richard Burton is the he plays David Copperfield in it. So he's kind of like narrating the story. Boris Karloff in this as well. Let's get back to the third portion from December 24th, 1950 of David Copperfield on the Theater Guild on the Air.
When I wrote to Agnes, telling her of my happiness with Dora, she answered with sweet encouragement. But always there was a note of mystery and sadness when she wrote about her own life. The reason for this I learned one evening when Uriah Heep came from Canterbury and called on me in my rooms.
Master Copperfield, I mean Mr. Copperfield, you've heard something, I dare say, of a change in my expectations?
No, I have not.
Oh, then I shall have the pleasure myself. Actually, it was you who prophesied.
Prophesied what?
Don't you remember saying to me once that perhaps it might one day be Wickfield and Heap?
What do you mean?
And I recollect saying that I was much too humble and that...
Uriah, tell me, what do you mean?
Why, I mean that now it is Wickfield and Heap. No. Oh, what a worthy man is Mr. Wickfield, but how imprudent.
Imprudent?
Oh, Master Copperfield, it's not for an humble person like myself to talk of such a worthy as Mr. Wickfield. I've only to allude to his imprudence in the matter of drinking.
But surely he can't
have... Oh, my, yes, Master Copperfield. If anyone else had been in my place during the last year... By this time, he'd have had Mr. Wickfield under his thumb. Quite under his thumb.
But you, I suppose you...
Oh,
have not...
I, Master Copperfield. I have been but his humble helper.
I must see Agnes about this, and at once.
Oh, I wish you would. She's here in London. She's lovely, isn't she, Master Copperfield?
She is superior in all respects to anyone around her.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for that.
There is no reason why you should thank me.
Oh, Master Copperfield, humble as I am, humble as my mother is, the image of Miss Agnes has been in my breast for years.
You'd best not talk like this, Uriah.
Oh, with what a pure affection do I love the ground my Agnes walks on.
Your Agnes? You mentioned this to her?
Oh, no, Master Copperfield. My Agnes is very young, and I still have to work my way upward. I'm only just emerging from my lowly station.
No matter what your station, she would never consent
to... Master Copperfield, I rest a good deal of hope on her observing how useful I am to her father. She's so much attached to her father that I think she may come on his account to be friendly to me.
So that's your scheme?
And I'm telling it you, Master Copperfield, so that you will not unconsciously go against me. I know that you wouldn't wish to make unpleasantness in the family. Would you, Master Copperfield?
Agnes, I've just come from Uriah Heep. How did your father...
It's too horrible to talk about, David.
But you saw how Father, night after night, sat morosely mourning Mother's death, seeking refuge from his sorrows in the ever-present bottle of port.
So it was that.
Uriah saw it too. And little by little, he exploited Papa's weaknesses. When I would lock up the wine, he would get Papa more.
Agnes, my dear.
He finally made himself indispensable to Papa. And then he told him he was going away, unless Papa cared to make some other arrangement with him.
That other arrangement being the partnership. Oh, it's incredible.
Yes, and horrible. For since that time, Papa is actually afraid of him.
Your father? Afraid of Uriah Heep?
Yes. Oh, there's something between them. Some mystery I do not understand, and probably never shall.
Oh, Agnes, let me help you.
David,
let me...
please. The only way you can help us is to be kind to Uriah.
Kind to him? But you know what he plans, what he...
It makes no difference. We have no other choice. Because Papa and I, horrible as it is to say, Papa and I, we are in his power.
For the next month, I lived on Dora and coffee. When I wasn't calling on Dora, I was working hard that I might be worthy of Dora. As for Agnes, I didn't tell her of Uriah Heep's plans for her, because I knew it would distress her. And since Uriah had yet to work his way up a little more, I thought I had time. Meanwhile, I had a letter from that master of all letter writers, Micawber.
You find me, my dear Copperfield, engaged in the sale of corn upon commission. However, it's not an avocation of enumerative description. In other words, it does not pay. I am, however, delighted to add that I now have an immediate prospect of something turning up.
To hear of his prospects, I invited Micawber and his wife to my rooms for dinner.
As we are quite confidential here, Mr. Copperfield, I should like to have your opinion as to what branch of endeavor a man of Mr. Micawber's talents is likely to succeed in.
You embarrass me, my dear Emma.
If my opinion can be of help, I should be glad to give it.
I may have a conviction, Mr. Copperfield, that Mr. Micawber's manner qualifies him for the banking business.
Mr. Micawber feels that if he had a deposit at the banking house, my manner as representing that banking house would inspire confidence in her.
But if the various banking houses refuse to avail themselves of Mr. Micawber's abilities, what is the use of dwelling on that idea?
In short, Copperfield, my wife is convinced, and she's convinced me, that things cannot be expected to turn up of themselves. We must, in a measure, assist them in turning up.
So, here is Mr. Micawber with a great talent. I should say genius. But that may be the partiality of a wife.
Emma, my dear.
It's true.
What Mrs. Micawber is trying to say is that here I am with my capacities and without suitable employment. Now, where does the responsibility rest? Clearly on society.
Oh, it does indeed.
And so it appears to her, Copperfield, that what I should do is to throw down the gauntlet to society and say, in effect, show me who will take that up.
I quite agree, but how is this to be done?
By advertising. Mr. Micawber has to advertise in all the papers for a position worthy of his talent.
I feel I must do this, Copperfield, in justice to myself, in justice to my family, and in justice to society.
Shortly after I loaned Mr. Micawber the money to pay for his advertisement, I had cause to regret my extravagance. For my aunt, Betsy Trotwood, upon whose generous bounty I had been living, came to London with sad news.
These are comfortable rooms you have here, David.
They're as reasonable as I could find, Aunt.
That's just as well, because from now on I shall be living here with you.
As a chaperone, Aunt?
What makes you say that?
You were cross that Dora and I are engaged.
Oh, of course I'm not cross. Though I think you are a little blind.
blind?
Yes, blind as to where your true love lies.
Aunt, I know Dora and I are young and inexperienced, but we love one another truly.
Poor little couple. You think you are formed for one another and to go through a party, supper table kind of life like two pretty pieces of confectionery.
Aunt, have you come to stay with me to dissuade me from Dora?
No, David. I've come to stay with you because I'm ruined.
Ruined?
Yes. It's a frumpy, grumpy story, David, but suffice it to say that I invested unwisely and am ruined.
But Mr. Wickfield had us all your...
No, these I invested myself. Mr. Wickfield had, nothing to do with it. Oh, David, I know this alters your plans somewhat. I don't know what your daughter will say.
Nor I.
But we must meet reverses boldly and not suffer them to frighten us, my dear. Mm. We must learn to act the play out. We must live misfortune down.
Don't, Jim. Oh, don't. Davy has something to say to me.
Dora.
Yes, Dodie?
Dora, could you love a beggar?
How can you ask anything so foolish, Dodie?
Dora, my own dearest, I am a beggar.
Oh, how can you be such a silly thing? I'll make Chip bite you.
Dora, I am your ruined David. I have not a penny. I must tell you this and offer you release from our engagement if you want it.
Oh, Dodie, don't talk like that.
Oh, my sweet Dora, does that mean your heart is still mine?
Yes, Dodie. Only don't be dreadful. Don't be practical. Because when you're practical, it frightens me so.
Sometime thereafter, I received a letter from Canterbury. I was surprised to see that the address was not in Agnes's handwriting. I opened the letter and was amazed to read...
My dear Copperfield, you may possibly not be unprepared to receive the information that as a result of me flinging down the gauntlet to society, in short, as a result of me advertising, something has turned up. In fact, my dear Copperfield, I stand pledged and contracted to your old friend, Uriah Heep, to assist him in the capacity of, to be his confidential clerk. Mrs. Micawber is convinced that giving me mind to a profession so adapted to me fertile resources and me flow of language, I must distinguish myself and may find myself ere long a judge or a chancellor. Looking forward to our early reunion, I am ever yours, Wilkins Micawber.
Curious at this turn of events, I travelled down to Canterbury to see Micawber in his new surroundings.
My dear Copperfield, to a man possessed of the higher imaginative powers, the objection to legal work is the amount of detail which it involves.
How do you find Mr. Heap as an employer?
All I can say is that my friend Heap has been most generous in advancing me financial assistance.
And Mr. Wickfield?
Mr. Wickfield is, I dare say, a man of very excellent intentions, but he is, in short... He is obsolete.
I'm afraid his partner seeks to make him so.
My dear Copperfield, I'm here in a capacity of confidence. I would therefore suggest that in our intercourse we draw a line. On this side is the whole range of human intellect, with a trifling exception, and on the other is that exception, the affairs of Messrs. Wickfield and Heap.
He has won you over, hasn't he, Micawber?
David!
Oh,
David.
Don't close the door, Miss Wickfield. I'm just on my way to my humble dwelling. Good day, Copperfield. Miss Wickfield.
Ah, Agnes, how I've missed you lately.
Indeed, and so soon.
You were so much in the habit of thinking for me in the old days that my reliance is still on you.
But it must not be on me, David. It must be on someone else.
On Dora?
Of course. You still love her, don't you, David?
Oh, Agnes, you should see her. I've never seen such dancing blue eyes, such curls.
Yes, you do love her.
Are you sad that I'm in love, Agnes? You sounded sad.
Of course I'm not sad, David. I'm very happy for you.
Agnes, there's no one else but you to tell me. Dare I ask her to marry me?
If she will make you happy. If she will make you happy, I think you should ask her.
Oh, Agnes, you've never seen such adorable hands, such exquisite...
I'm sure, David. But you must tell us all about her at dinner. Now I must go to Father.
Oh, forgive me. In my happiness, I didn't ask...
You will see him at dinner.
He is not the man you knew, David. He hardly dares to speak now without consulting Uriah with his eyes. But you shall see.
All right, that's part three of this hour-long broadcast of David Copperfield starring Boris Karloff and Richard Burton on the Theater Guild on the Air. We'll have more of it in just a few minutes.
Getting into the holiday spirit yet?
Oh, yeah. So where are you going for the holidays, Lisa?
I am
You're leaving the show.
I know, but you know what? I will come back bright and
fresh
and eager.
Are going to miss you, Lisa.
You know, I'll post photos. I'm going to Sarasota. That's where my parents have a place, and so I'm going to stay with them, the whole family.
Is that where Sarah drinks a soda all the time?
Sarah drinks a soda. I'm going to drink a soda, and the whole family's going. We're going to hang out with my parents for a little while.
Wow.
Just a little rest and relaxation.
Am I invited? No, I guess not.
You know what? There's six of us and a little puppy going, so I don't know.
Folks,
might be crowded there.
I'm not invited.
Where did you get the sound effect?
It's a secret.
It's a secret.
Yeah,
who
this
gave
was,
that to
this
you?
Was actually part of my Christmas present from Lisa.
True.
It's like a sound effects thing, and it has... I haven't figured out all the buttons yet.
It's really high
tech. Let's see what this one is. Yeah, it's scary. What's this one? That's a good one.
Whatever.
You don't need that. I can do that for you.
What's this one? Hang on.
Tip-tom-tiddly-too.
See, Carl's so easy to abuse.
I'm like a child, you know? It's like, ooh, a new toy.
Well, it's only part of the present.
And then she got me a Lululemon travel kit.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It has a toothbrush in there.
No, I bought that part separately.
Oh, yeah, okay. So the Lululemon thing didn't have anything in it?
Right.
That's very nice, Lisa.
Well, thank you. And thank you for your
gift.
She
knows I like Lululemon.
Yeah,
stuff.
I do too.
I like Lululemon a lot. You know, one of these days I'll get you a holiday present too.
Well, I'm waiting. So I'm leaving Saturday. So
I got you a nice present.
I got a gift card from Neiman Marcus. So
yeah.
I'm very excited about that.
$10.
I can pick out a lot of things at Neiman Marcus for $10.
Yes, you can. You can probably get one sock.
I could probably get two water bottles there.
You get one sock, and then like next year I'll give you another $10 gift certificate.
And maybe I can get the matching sock.
It's only two.
Well, at least I don't have holes in my
take
socks.
Take you 2 years. So what? It's no it won't be so bad, right?
Okay, I'm waiting.
All right, let's get back now to the conclusion of David Copperfield on Theater Guild on the Air.
After dinner that evening, Mr. Wickfield, Uriah, and I were left at the table, alone.
Mr. Wickfield, old friend and partner, let me fill your glass for another toast.
I think we've drunk enough toast, Uriah.
David, if Uriah wants us to drink another toast, perhaps we'd better.
But Mr. Wickfield...
We mustn't offend him, David.
There now, fellow partner, Master Copperfield, I am about to drink to the divinest of her sex.
Uriah, mind what you say.
I know I am but an humble individual to give you her health. But I admire her. I adore her.
Uriah.
Now, Davy. Uriah has a right to toast his sweetheart if he will. Who is she, Uriah? To whom do we drink?
To Agnes Wickfield.
No, Mr. Wickfield.
To be her father is a proud distinction, but to be her husband...
Stop. I will not stay here and listen to such blasphemy.
If I say I've an ambition to make your Agnes my Agnes, I have as good a right to it as any man.
You detestable serpent. Look at him, David. Look at my torturer. Under his influence, I have step by step... abandon name and reputation, peace and quiet, house and home. And now...
Mr. Wickfield, I have kept your name and reputation and your peace and quiet and your house and home.
Oh, David, what have I come down to since I first saw you in this house? Weak indulgence has ruined me. indulgence in remembrance of my wife, and indulgence in forgetfulness offered by this. I have taken my last glass. I swear I have taken my last glass.
Oh, come now, Mr. Wickfield.
David, I'll tell you all about this fellow here.
Stop him, Copperfield, or he'll say things he'll be sorry to have said and you'll be sorry to have heard.
I'll say anything. Why should I not be in all the world's power if I am in yours?
Because you have a daughter.
Scoundrel!
Now, let's sleep in dog's lie. Who wants to rouse him? Can't you see? I'm as humble as can be.
Humble. Humble. You humble. You hypocrite.
Mr. Wickfield.
Well, Master Copperfield, I suppose you have sometimes plucked a pear before it was ripe.
Good night, Heap.
I did that tonight. But it'll ripen yet. It only wants attending to. I can wait.
And now weeks, months, seasons pass along. They seem little more than a summer day and a winter evening. Yet in that time, I had been reasonably successful in my work, and above all else, I had come of age and married Dora Spenlow. And I found marriage a strange condition. It was such a stupendous thing to know for certain that Dora put her hair up in papers. It was altogether such an astonishing event to see her do it. It was also a painful thing to wait dinner because of Dora's inability to manage the cook.
I did but see her passing by, and yet I'll love her till I die.
My dear, do you think the cook has any idea of time?
Why do you ask, Dodie?
Well, because it's 7 and we were to have dined at 6. Don't you think you should talk with the cook?
Oh, no, please, I couldn't.
Why not?
Because I'm such a silly, and she knows I am.
But my love.
Oh, no, please, don't be a naughty Bluebeard. Don't be serious.
My sweet, I'm only trying to reason with you.
Well, I didn't marry to be reasoned with. If you meant to reason with such a poor little girl as I am, you wouldn't have told me so, you cruel boy.
Dora, my darling.
No, I'm not your darling. Because you must be sorry you married me, or else you wouldn't reason with me.
I'm sorry, my love. I won't try to reason with you. I promise.
That's right, Dodie. Because reasoning makes me uncomfortable. And it's much better for me to be stupid than uncomfortable.
Aunt Betsy called her Little Blossom. And it seemed a gay name at first for my child wife, not meant for the cares and worries of this world. But when she took sick and weakened that winter, and I had to carry her up and downstairs, I thought, oh, what a fatal name it was, and how the blossom withered in its bloom upon the tree. And then, one night near the end, Dora called me to her side. Yes, my darling.
Dodie, I'm going to say something I have often thought of. Will you mind?
Mind, my darling?
Perhaps you have often thought the same.
What is that, my dear?
I'm afraid I was too young.
Now, Dora.
Not just in years, but in experience and thoughts and everything.
Dora, don't.
I was such a silly little creature. I'm afraid it would have been better if we had only loved each other as boy and girl and forgotten it.
Oh, my Dora.
I have begun to think I was not fit to be a wife.
Soon after Dora's death, my mind was taken off my own troubles by a letter from Mr. Wickfield.
Dear David, Mr. Micawber, an old acquaintance of yours, I believe, has made some rather startling discoveries concerning the activities of Uriah Heep, and begs that you and your aunt travel to Canterbury to be present at what he characteristically calls an explosion. I am unable to take an active part in this, being confined to my bed with rheumatic fever. But I know that you will not fail me in this, my hour of need. Your friend, Wickfield.
Miss Betsy Trotwood, Mr. David Copperfield, calling on Mr. Heap.
Well, I'm sure this is an unexpected pleasure. Miss Trotwood, Master Copperfield.
Mr. Heap.
Things have changed in this office, Miss Trotwood, since I was an humble clerk and Elger Pony, ain't they? But I'm not changed, Miss Trotwood.
To tell you the truth, sir, I think you are pretty constant to the promise of your youth, if that's any satisfaction to you.
Oh, thank you for your good opinion. You needn't wait, Micawber. Won't you sit down, Miss Trotwood, David?
I prefer standing, thank you.
Micawber, did you hear me tell you not to wait?
Yes.
Then why do you wait?
Because I, in short, choose.
You're a dissipated fellow, as all the world knows, and I'm afraid you'll oblige me to get rid of you. Go along, and I'll talk to you presently.
If there's a scoundrel with whom I've already talked too much, that scoundrel's name is Heap.
Why, you insolent...
Hold on, Uriah.
Sit down, Mr. Heap.
Oh, ho! So this is a conspiracy. You've met here by appointment.
They met here at the request of your no longer humble servant, Wilkins Micawber.
Master Copperfield, you always wear a puppy with a browed stomach, even from your first coming here. And you envy me me rise, do you?
Your rise?
Mr. Micawber, proceed with your charge.
I have written it all here in a brief letter.
Yes, and save the man. He'd write letters by the ream, even if it was a capital offense.
Are you going to listen to this scum's charges against me?
We are indeed. Proceed, Micawber.
Dear Miss Trotwood and gentlemen, in appearing before you to denounce probably the most consummate villain that has ever existed, I ask no consideration for myself. The victim from my cradle of pecuniary liabilities, to which I have been unable to respond, I have ever been the sport and toy of debasing circumstances. Ignominy, want, despair, madness have collectively or separately been the attendants of my career.
Madness indeed, and you listen to this wretch.
Under such circumstances, I entered the office of the firm, nominally under the appellation of Wickfield and Heap, but in reality wielded by Heap alone. Heap, and only Heap, is the forger and cheat.
The devil take you. Give me that letter.
Approach one step nearer, and if your head is human, I'll break it.
No. Get on with your charge, man.
I'll listen to no more of this.
You'll stay in this room, you heap of infamy. Now sit down there, Heap. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. Forced as I was to avail myself of pecuniary advances offered by this contemptible Heap, I soon found myself by reason of numerous IOUs under his thumb. I then found that my services were constantly being called into requisition for the falsification of business and the mystification of Mr. Wickfield.
If you don't stop now...
Pray, Uriah, don't stop him now that he's getting at last to the point.
When Mr. Wickfield's faculties and memory for business became, through causes which is not necessary or expedient for me to enter, weakened and confused, Heap obtained his signature to documents of importance, representing them to be other documents of no importance.
You shall prove this, Micawber.
The proof of this is at hand, as well as the proof that you systematically forged to various entries, books, and documents the signature of Mr. Wickfield.
Uriah Heap. You know what I want.
These are all lies.
Sit down, Heap.
I want my property.
But Aunt Betsy...
As long as I believed it had been made away with by Mr. Wickfield, I wouldn't breathe a syllable of its having been placed here for investment. Now that I know this fellow's answerable for it, I'll have it. David, come and take it away from him.
Everything will be taken from him in good time, Aunt.
Including his humbleness.
Where is your proof? Where is your proof?
There are the books and documents.
Ah, yes, if you have them, but you haven't. They're here in the safe. There, see where they... Where are they? They've gone.
Fancy that.
Some miserable thief has stolen the books.
They've come into Copperfield's possession. He has the power of attorney for Mr. Wickfield.
So you have them, do you? Well... What's to be done?
I will tell you what's to be done.
You, as Copperfield, no tongue.
You must make restoration of all you have stolen to the last farthing.
I won't do it. I won't do it. I may be humble, but I will not be put upon.
Micawber, you will go around to the guild hall and bring a couple of officers.
Stop. Copperfield, I've always hated you. You've always been an upstart, and you've always been against me.
Micawber?
All right, all right. I'll do what you want.
It is you, Uriah, who have been in your greed and cunning against the world. There never were greed and cunning in the world yet that did not do too much and overreach themselves. It is as certain as death.
Now then,
Copperfield, I've not quite finished my letter. May I proceed?
Please do.
I have now concluded. It merely remains for me, with my ill-starred family, to disappear from the landscape on which we appear to be an encumbrance. Let it be injustice merely said of me, as of a gallant and eminent naval hero with whom I have no pretensions to cope, that what I have done, I did in spite of mercenary and selfish objects, for England, home, and beauty. Yours, etc., 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 Wilkins Micawber.
Now my story nears its end. I have but to record that when Aunt Betsy regained her property, she paid off all Micawber's debts and sent him to start his life anew in Australia, where, by virtue of his diligence and application, he in time justified Mrs. Micawber's faith in him and became a magistrate. As for me, I returned to England after a year of travel, returned to recapture, if possible, a treasure I had unwittingly thrown away in my boyhood. And on Christmas Eve, I stood before the fire in the Wickfield parlor in Canterbury and watched Agnes.
David, why do you look at me so closely?
Try to guess your secret.
My secret?
Yes. Let me share it. My aunt has told me.
What has she told you?
That you are in love. That is your secret, isn't it?
If it is, it is not a new one.
Not new. Then I must know him.
You do, as well as you know yourself.
Myself? Agnes. Agnes, look at me.
Spare me my blushes, David.
Oh, Agnes, if you only knew. I went away loving you. I stayed away loving you, and I've returned home loving you.
Oh, David.
But I never dreamed that you could love me.
Didn't you know, David? Hadn't you ever guessed?
But when, my darling? When did you... I mean, when
David,
did it all...
I have loved you all my life.
The curtain has fallen on the Theatre Guild on-the-air production of David Copperfield, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation. We express our thanks to our stars, Boris Karloff as Uriah Heep, Flora Robson as Betsy Trotwood, Cyril Richard as Mr. Micawber, Hugh Williams as Mr. Wickfield, and Richard Burton as David. Our thanks also to our featured players, Isabel Elsom as Peggotty, Brenda Forbes as Mrs. Micawber, and David Cole as the boy David, and to the other members of our cast whom you heard in these roles, as Agnes, Penelope Mundy, as Dora, Patricia Marmont, as Murdstone, John Merrivale, and as Barkis, Carl Harbord. The Theatre Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langner and Teresa Helburn, with Armina Marshall executive producer. S. Mark Smith is editor. Music was composed and conducted by Hara Levy. Your announcer is Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at the same time.
Mm-hmm. the famous NBC chimes there on the Theater Guild on the Air from December 24th, 1950, with David Copperfield, starring Boris Karloff along with Richard Burton and a host of other stars. Roger Pryor doing the hosting on that program. And a good show. Hope you enjoyed that hour-long broadcast. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right? Get your free app today, Lisa.
Whatever you say, Carl, I'm in.
Our app's real.
I don't know. Are they?
Are they?
Are they? What do you think?
I think
you have two of them on your phone.
I think they might be real. Yeah, because
so you're really.
I use Spot Hero and it works. It actually finds me a spot to park.
Really, where do you park?
And then the other one, Uber.
A few blocks down.
Uber works. I've been able to call an Uber.
Uber
once in a while.
Uber is great
on my Uber app. And you know what? I'm sorry, all the Uber drivers that have ever driven me around. I didn't realize that after, you know, you're done.
After your ride, you can choose to give them a tip.
You can choose to give them
you
a tip.
You just figured that out?
I just figured that out recently.
All right. Well, now you know.
So
would you tip them?
Yeah. You know I'm a good tipper, Lisa.
Are you?
Yeah, I give 1% or 2% generally.
that was
no,
very
I'm
generous.
Actually, you know, one thing I will say, I've always been a very good tipper.
You
right?
Know,
aren't I?
Yes, but speaking of tippers,
yeah.
This is an interesting concept because you and I went to a wedding, not together. We were both at the same wedding. We went to Mike's wedding.
Okay.
And we were sitting and having dinner and we were leaving.
Yeah.
And we had a little conversation about this because you left a tip for the wait staff
yeah.
at the wedding. And I yeah. said, you don't do that because
yeah.
somebody.
I always do that.
Because I said, that doesn't make sense. Because obviously somebody's paying for the wedding and they're tipping the staff.
Now, see, I completely disagree with you.
I've never seen anybody leave a tip when they were invited to
a wedding. I've never gone to a wedding and not tipped my waitress.
I'm not talking about a bartender.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
I'm talking about you sit at the table.
The girl or guy who brings you your food
at a wedding.
And they're bringing you coffee and all this kind of stuff.
And you leave them a tip.
No, I give them. I just hand it to them. I say, hey, thanks a lot. You did a great
job.
It's
very kind of you.
And I give her a tip.
But I've never done that, and I've never seen anybody else do that and never
felt
the need to do that.
I learned that from my father, because my father always used to do that.
At like an event, like a wedding, you leave a tip.
Every wedding.
For the
waitstaff. I've never had bad service at a wedding.
No, presuming you have good service, I've still never left a tip at an affair like that.
Yeah, because they're... You know, those people don't make a lot of money. They're not getting paid a lot of money.
I know, but whoever's doing the wedding pays the waitstaff and pays the tip.
Let me tell you something. Do you know how happy they are when you give them a nice tip? They're
wow,
that's awesome.
I've never seen it. So, guys, weigh in. Let me know. Am I missing the boat here?
Yeah, you're missing the boat. You should tip the waiter or waitress.
So, I'm invited to a wedding, and
yes.
when I leave, I should tip the waiter or waitress who served me at the wedding.
I don't usually do it after I leave. What I do is before the coffee. So, if they've...
It's dessert time.
Yeah, if they've done a good job,
Carl, people do this?
I have seen other people
do
it.
Okay, you guys, please help me. Let me know. Am I missing the boat or is Carl crazy?
981-7200.
I don't know.
I always do it.
Never heard of it.
But I will say this. I wasn't tipping my Uber drivers, but I didn't realize.
Well, that's different.
I didn't realize. Now I know you can add a tip, so I'm going to do that.
But I will tell you, and this is true, and somebody just texted in, and thank you for bringing this up. When you tip an Uber or Lyft driver on the app...
Yeah.
Then the company takes a cut from the driver. And that is absolutely true. So you're better off giving the guy $5 cash than you are adding it on the app.
So I'm learning because...
Cash is the only way. You are right. So thank you.
Okay, that's good to know.
For that tax. That's from Mark.
Well, Lisa never has any cash on her, so she would have to do it on the app.
No.
Lisa leaves the house with no cash on her.
True.
She hangs out with me and she's like, boy, I could use a Pellegrino right about now.
That's true.
Guess who pays?
That is absolutely
true. Boy, I have a taste for some candy.
I don't get candy, but mm-hmm. I do get a Pellegrino.
And who pays?
But thank you for that tax. That is true. Give the guy $5. Give him cash.
Or girl. Could be a girl.
Give her cash.
In our next hour, Roy Rogers, a Christmas show called The Night Before Christmas. It's from 1952. That's coming your way. Stick around.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Don. All right, it is 10 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning, and this is our third hour. Thanks for staying up late with us here on the WGN Radio Theater. We've got a good Western. It's actually a holiday story from Christmas of 1952 on the Roy Rogers Show. That is coming your way in just a few minutes, but it's time now to play our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yes, indeed. And the celebrity is Leonardo DiCaprio.
Heard of him.
Okay, good. Then you should be great at this game, Carl.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And the prize will be a Twilight Zone radio drama 4-CD set.
Okay.
All right.
All right, what callers do you
We're
going to
go with caller 5.
Caller 5.
And the number is 312-981-7200. Call now. We'll be right
back. I say 7200.
What?
I say 7200, and you say 7200.
That's true. That's why we're
different
people.
But we say the 312 the same, and then
right.
we say, do you say 981?
Just I like do. I just,
just
like you.
Very good. All right, so this the last part. We just can't get it together.
No, but that's the beauty of having two different people host the show.
Yep.
We're slightly different.
I'm from Mars, and you're from Venus.
Exactly.
All right, call us now. Fifth caller. We'll be right back.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
We're going to get ridiculous with Dave. We've got Dave on the line. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Hey, Carl, can't you guys call Bob back into the office, Bob, and have him get your name right this time?
Bob who?
Are you talking about Bob at what? At WGN?
Bob Curtis. Bob Curtis.
Oh, Bill?
It's a joke. Bill Curtis. Bill
oh,
Curtis.
It's Bill.
Ah, yeah. Does he say my name wrong?
Yeah, he calls you Earl. It annoys the heck out of me.
You know, it's so funny.
Earl.
People say that.
Oh, that's funny.
Some people hear it Earl and some
really?
People hear it as Carl.
You know, it's like some of those things where they say you look at something and it's
colors.
Blue and it's really
right,
green.
Right.
I hear Carl. I don't know.
I hear Carl.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with that.
I don't know.
Well,
but
I'm glad you made it
Dave,
through, Dave.
Quick question for you because we've been getting tons and tons of texts about the tipping at a wedding or not tipping at a wedding. If you get good service at a wedding, Dave, do you tip the waiter or waitress?
Well, yes, I do. And I also, of course, tip the bartenders. I actually have worked in the service industry. So, yes, people need to tip their bartenders and their servers.
I totally get the bartender thing. And I so appreciate the servers. Although some people are texting in that and other people are saying, you know, those tips are paid for by the person.
Well, we'll get into it a little more.
Right. By
I just
the person
wanted to see what Dave had to say about it.
All right. All right. Well,
but let's. Let's check your IQ on
Leonardo DiCaprio. All right. Number one, Leonardo DiCaprio is named after the artist Leonardo da Vinci. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
Gosh.
I wouldn't say ridiculous, but it's false.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's the same thing
I agree
in my
with
book.
Dave. It's false. It's ridiculous.
I'm so sorry, but that is absolutely correct. He is named after
Dave.
The artist Leonardo da Vinci.
Gosh, I am horrible this weekend at this
Whatever
game.
Carl says, the best thing to do is disagree. Let's go to the next one. He was chosen.
I would get no tip.
That's for sure. He was chosen by People magazine as one of the 50 most beautiful people in the world in 1998. Is that real or ridiculous?
Real.
I say it's real.
That is real. Oh, you're doing great, Carl.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You guys got one right. Number three. His father was a plumber. Is that real or ridiculous?
Did he work on the Titanic?
He may have.
So Dave says real.
I would say real.
All right. I'm going to say real along with Dave.
That is false. Oh. I'm sorry. He was a comic book dealer.
Gosh.
So close, though. But you guys did well. You both got one
Dave
right.
Dave wants some Twilight Zone CDs. All
you
right.
sure did, Dave. You've got the 4-CD set of the Twilight Zone radio drama. You will enjoy that over and over and over again.
Way
so
go,
congratulations.
Dave.
And thank you so much for playing with
hey,
us.
Hey, Dave, Merry Christmas to you, buddy.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays,
Thanks.
Everybody. And
you too.
I love you guys.
You too.
Take care.
We love you, buddy. All right, so Lisa, let me see. There was 9 questions.
Yes.
I got 7 wrong.
That is absolutely
I got
right.
7 wrong, and I got 2 right. I think, right? I only got
that
2.
Is right.
I think I only got 2 right.
You got 2 right.
Wow.
You are good at this game.
Wow.
Either that or I am just really good.
Man, You're very good at this game.
Well, that might be too.
Well, we have been getting a ton of texts about the tipping. I am a big believer in tipping for good service. Doesn't matter where. You know, here's the other thing. Let's say some guy comes to my house and fixes my air conditioner.
Right.
Or something like that. I tip him too.
You give him above and beyond what he charges.
I tip when, honestly now, I'm not even joking around. If somebody comes, like, fixes something of mine or, like, you know, they do good work for you. You know, like, my drape is stuck or something and I have to call somebody to fix that. And, you know, they get up there on a ladder and they fix it. I tip them.
Well, here's the thing, Carl. This is just not consistent because, you know, if you tip people for their good work and for their work ethic.
They send me a bill.
Wait, I pay it.
I get the person.
What I don't understand is why you wouldn't tip the people that work for you here at the radio station. Me.
You want me to tip you?
Sure.
Yeah, I'll tip you over. that chair's pretty high up.
I could tip you over. I don't receive a tip. Maybe I'll have to fix your drapes next time to get a tip.
Yeah, do that.
I'll go fix your drapes.
No, okay, so the texts are coming in, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We love hearing from our listeners. And you're saying it's about 50-50?
So far, about 50-50.
Oh, boy. All right, we'll read some.
We'll see what happens.
We'll read some in the next, right after the news.
Okay.
But right now, it's time for the Roy Rogers Show. This Western came to radio in 1944 and lasted all the way to 1955. He was billed as the King of the Cowboys. Roy Rogers starred with his wife Dale Evans on this show, along with his sidekick Gabby Hayes. The songs were performed by the Sons of the Pioneers, but they were replaced in 1948 by Foy Willing and the Riders of the Purple Sage. And this was a good show. It was a very popular Western adventure series. It did make a transition to television, very popular from 1951 to 1957. We have a Christmas show for you now called The Night Before Christmas. It stars Roy Rogers and Dale Evans from Christmas of 1952, The Roy Rogers Show.
It's The Roy Rogers Show.
Happy trails to you. It's nice to meet again. Happy trails to you. Until the journey's end.
Post Grape Nuts Flakes, the great two-minute energy cereal, brings you The Roy Rogers Show, transcribed on the Double R Bar Ranch with Pat Brady and the Queen of the West, Dale Evans.
Happy trails to you. Time to ride again.
And here he is, in person, the King of the Cowboys, Roy Rogers.
Well, howdy, folks. You know, being a cowboy, you need lots of energy. That's why Grape Nuts Flakes is the cereal I like for strength and energy. Just 2 minutes after you eat a big bowlful, that whole wheat energy starts going to work for you. Try Grape Nuts Flakes, Buckaroos. They're great.
It is the night before Christmas. In the Eureka Cafe, the supper rush is over, but the excitement certainly hasn't died down.
Boy, oh boy, Roy, in a couple of hours, you and me and Nellie Bell will be purring our way up in the hills.
Snarling might be a better word for the way that motor sounds, Pat, but I promised I'd go on Nellie Bell and I'll go through with it. I just hope our new broadhead arrows really do the business when we treat some of those snarling cats.
Well, of all the ridiculous ways to spend the Christmas holidays, hunting cougars with a bow and arrow. I might say with a bow and arrow yet.
Oh, Dale, me and Roy haven't had a chance to do any important hunting for practically a year now.
No, we're a couple of free and easy cowpokes with work all taken care of for a few days, and we're going to spend Christmas having fun. Bullet here will enjoy it, too.
Well, Pat isn't getting out of here tonight until every one of the Christmas decorations is up to suit me.
Perhaps a block down the main street in the dim night light of the Mineral City General Store, there are two men with a rather different sort of holiday spirit.
Hey,
We're going to do all right around these parts, Long. This store had a rip-snorting Christmas rush. Must have been 800-900 in this till.
We'll stuff it in your pockets, Daniels, and let's get out of here. Somebody patrols this alley every night, and I never did trust these Hicktown cops.
Get used to them, Long. Get used to them.
Hey, Duck. Somebody's looking in the front door.
Where? Oh, yeah. Get hold of your nerves, Long. That's nothing but a man and a kid doing a little window shopping.
Window shopping? Nothing. The guy's motioning like he sees us, wants to talk to us. Come on, let's beat it.
Not on your life. I got a lot to teach you about this racket, Long. We're letting him in.
What?
Certainly. We might as well pick ourselves up a handmade patsy. Oh, confound these spurs always getting in the way.
Daniels, you're overdoing this rancher gag. You'll never learn to walk with spurs on.
Yes, what did you want?
Well, we just thought if the store was still open, well, we're just passing through town.
And the stuff in your windows is sure pretty.
Well, I'm just closing up, but come on in.
You wait for me out there, Jess. I won't be long.
Okay, Daddy.
When my little girl saw the dolls, I guess I'll surprise her. I might as well see that she enjoys Christmas a little.
Look, son, my partner and I are late, and we're in a hurry to get somewhere. Why don't you just find what you want and leave the money? Prices are all marked.
You mean you'd trust me? The way I look and everything?
Sure, sure.
Well, I just want a small doll. I got just about enough to get us a place to stay tonight.
Oh, don't apologize, stranger. Oh, one thing. Lock the back door when you leave and close it behind you. The front door lock doesn't work that way. All right, Long, let's be on our way. That new gray horse of mine has been stomping and champing at the bit for the last 5 minutes.
You like that? Maybe some people aren't so bad after all. I can't stand to see Christmas come. And I guess I can't let Jess know how I feel.
Oh, Dale, everything's spick and span and sparkling. We've been 2 hours putting up this silly tinsel.
Say, why don't you turn your waiter loose, Dale?
Well, I just want one more string of lights put up, and then you archery fiends can be on your way.
Well, look who's here.
Oh, what a cute little girl. What can we do for you, young lady?
My daddy asked me to wait for him, but I got so cold, and I thought I'd write him a letter so he won't worry.
Well, Dale will get you a pencil. What's your name, partner?
Jess.
Jess what?
Just Jess. I'm 5 1/4 years old.
What do people call your daddy?
Oh, his name's Jim Gorman.
Gorman. You must be strangers around here.
We're strangers everywhere lately.
Well, here's the pencil and paper, Jess.
Oh, thank you. Except I can't write.
Well, why don't you tell me what you want to say, and I'll write it for you, and Roy will take it to your daddy.
Oh, that'd be neat. Just say, Dear Daddy, I got cold and I'm down the street with some nice people. Love, Jess.
Say, that's a nice note that I'll be mighty proud to deliver. Where did your daddy leave you, Jess?
I don't just know, but it was down that way, and there were dolls in the window.
Jess, honey, are you hungry?
Well...
Why don't you come in the kitchen with me? It's even warmer in there, and I'll whip you up the most super hamburger you ever tasted.
Well, I seem to eat an awful lot of hamburgers lately, but if it's the most super one I ever tasted...
Ain't that a cute little sprout, though?
She sure is. I wonder how a man could leave a kid like that just standing out in front of a store. Well, I better start looking him up, and then, well, we can be on our way.
Howdy, Roy, Pat.
Hi, Sheriff.
Hi.
Hey, Roy, the doggonest thing just happened.
I'm sorry, Sheriff. I don't have time to hear about any Mineral City crime waves right now.
Yeah, Roy's got to deliver a note, and then me and him are starting out for our Christmas vacation.
We're heading for the mountains. Going to spend the holidays hunting cougars.
Well, have a nice time. I can tell you about this fellow we caught robbing the general store after you get back.
Sure, as long as you caught him, that's the main thing.
It's a funny thing, though. My deputy was checking the alley, and he snatched this fellow red-handed coming out the back door. The deputy brought him down to jail, of course, and we searched him, and the only thing he had on him was a little doll and about $1.75 in cash.
Wait a minute, Sheriff. What was the man's name?
Oh, the name he gave us was Gorman or something like that, but I suppose he's using an alias.
Roy, maybe I better close the kitchen door. Seems to me I feel a draft. Now, Sheriff, was there anything else special about this fellow you was telling us about?
Well, he's like to blow his top there in the cell. Claims he's innocent, that he left his little daughter waiting for him in front of the store. But I went down to check, and there wasn't anyone there. I took my pass key and checked inside, and sure enough, the cash register was as empty as a used eggshell.
Pat, we don't have to start out on our hunting trip right this minute, do we?
No, not right this minute we don't.
Then why don't you sort of hang around here with Dale and that friend she has in the kitchen? I think I'll take a walk to the general store and maybe over to the jail with the sheriff.
Pat, a cougar can't be dangerous, not with such a silly name.
Oh, that's what you think, Jess. Believe me, if me and Roy didn't have our trusty bow and arrows, why, we wouldn't even dare go up in those hills.
Oh, go on. Anyway, nothing could happen to you as long as Bullet was with you.
I guess you told him that time, Jess. Bullet pulls those two cow pokes out of many a spot.
We had a dog once. That's why Mommy was still here. But Daddy and me couldn't take him along when we just hitch right and don't even know where we're going.
Jess, honey, are you sure you've had enough to eat?
Oh, sure. But you were right about those hamburgers, Miss Dale. All three of them are really super.
All right. Don't make a move and don't anybody open your mouths. Nobody will get hurt. All I want is that little girl.
Oh, no.
You touch that kid now.
Oh, Bullet, be quiet. That's just my daddy with a handkerchief over his face.
Jess, I...
What? You're this child's father?
Sure, he's my father.
Mister, that thing you're making believe is a gun in your pocket. That wouldn't be your finger by chance, would it?
What if it is? This is my little girl, and all we want is to get out of here. I haven't done anything, no matter what anyone says.
Daddy, this is such a nice place, and Miss Dale and Pat are so much fun. And I sent a man named Roy out to bring you a letter. Didn't he find you?
No, I guess he didn't. You see, Jess, I was a little late getting back to where I asked you to wait. And...
Fella, you didn't happen to sort of maybe break out of a certain building here in town just now, did you?
Well...
Not that it'd be hard. I seen cracker boxes that'd be tougher.
Could I see you in the kitchen just a minute, Mr. Gorman?
Look,
Daddy, Miss Dale makes super hamburgers. Why don't you have one?
Come along, just for a minute, please.
Well, if you say so, ma'am.
Now, Jess, if you don't believe what I told you about them cougars, I'm going to tell you something else. Just...
Now, look, mister, we're willing to forget the way you came in here after your little girl, but we're not going to let you go on messing things up for her.
Didn't you ever have things go so wrong that you got all mixed up?
Well, of course, everyone does. But you shouldn't ever steal. We know about the general store being robbed.
I didn't do it. I never stole a thing.
Did a man named Roy Rogers come down to the jail to talk to you?
No, I just talked to the sheriff. And then he left, and I saw my chance, and I broke out to get Jess.
Well, Roy and the sheriff were going back to the jail to talk to you. Now look, if you're innocent, I'm going to have Pat drive you right back. Maybe you can get back in your cell before anyone even notices that you're gone.
I am innocent. But what'll happen to Jess?
Well, Jess will be fine. Why, she's the nicest company I've had in years. And if you can convince Roy Rogers that you're straight, I'll guarantee that you'll spend Christmas with your daughter.
That's the first portion of the Roy Rogers Show. We'll have more of it in just a few minutes. What else I do, Lisa?
I'm afraid.
If I'm at a hotel, okay,
yes.
Let's say I'm on vacation, I'm at a hotel for a week, right? Every morning when I leave the hotel, I leave money. You know, the bed's not made because, you know, I don't make the bed when I'm on vacation. I make my bed at home. But if I'm on vacation,
this is turning into too
messy,
much information.
Got a messy bed, right?
It's
messy. I slept in it all night. I leave money on the bed every morning. I leave, I come back, and the bed's all made.
I
leave a tip for the maid.
Just to clarify, I'm not saying it's not nice to leave a tip. Of course it's nice and it's generous
maids
and it's kind.
Don't make much money.
I know, that's very kind,
so,
and I would do that too. Not every day, but at the end.
People,
I would
at
give
the end. You do?
At the end.
Okay, that's I do it every day.
No, just at the end, you might just hand them. You might just hand them $20. Thank you for doing such a nice job. But for some reason, that feels different to me than the waitress at a wedding.
All right, well, we're going
to
get into it.
But we're going to have more conversation.
Jerry's here. We're going to talk to Jerry about it, too.
Yep, he just left a wedding where he bartended, so he's got something to say.
A newborn king to see.
It's about the only words I know of this song.
That's it. Are there other words?
Gifts we bring.
You're a little off, but you're so close.
You know, I'm one word off or one syllable off. I'm one syllable off.
That's okay. It's all in the holiday spirit.
It's a great song, though. Yeah, Christmas is coming. Gotta love it. Okay, so we're listening to The Roy Rogers Show. When we come back, we will we'll talk with Jerry and Mark.
We're going to talk with Mark Harmon and Jerry Nunn. They are filling in.
We'll find out about the tipping for Dave Plyer,
and we're going to do a little crosstalk, and we're going to talk to Jerry a little bit because he just bartended tonight at a wedding, so he's
our guy. I want to know what Mark thinks about it, too. I want to see what Mark, if Mark's a big tipper.
Okay.
You know what? I think he is. I bet you he's going to agree with me.
I think he's going to be on my
side.
And
I think Jerry's going to agree with me, too.
Well, Jerry, yeah, but Mark, no.
But right now, it's the conclusion to The Roy Rogers Show.
Shine your flashlight down here, Sheriff, around the hitching rail.
We aren't getting any place, Roy. We poked around that score for more than a half an hour, and what do we know?
Well, we know that we found a dollar bill lying on the cash register, and that Garman had a 98-cent doll with him when he was arrested. And we also know that we found a piece of a spur in the store after it had been swept for the night, and that Garman wasn't wearing spurs.
Well, I know that, Roy.
Now, look here. We also know that Garman wasn't mounted. But there were two horses standing at this rail within the last couple of hours. One of them stood here calm-like, but the other one was an animal that, well, wasn't used to being tied. Well,
how can you tell that?
From the hoof marks. One of them was stomping all over the place. And if he happened to brush the rail a few times... Hey, here you are. Here's what I'm looking for.
You find some horse hair?
Sheriff, have you heard about any gray horses being stolen lately?
Not that I remember. But it'd be a simple matter to go back to the office and... check all the reports.
Good. We'll do that when we go back to talk to Gorman. And then, as soon as it's daylight, Pat and I have some work to do.
Work to do? I thought you was going on a hunting trip. Didn't you say something about cougars?
Well, the cats can wait for another few hours. First, I'm going to track a gray horse, and then I'll start worrying about cougar tracks.
It's time for another Roy Rogers reminder. Be a good loser. Yes, buckaroos, that's Roy's reminder for today. You know, even the best of cowboys can't always win at riding, roping, or wrangling. And Roy wants you to know that if you should lose sometime, that's the time to grin and say to yourself, well, I just gotta practice some more and build up some more strength and energy and make sure that next time I'll win. And say, buckaroos, talking about strength and energy that you need to win in almost anything you do. The best way to get it is to eat good, nourishing food like Grape Nuts Flakes. Roy eats Grape Nuts Flakes for energy. His picture's on every package. Yes, Roy likes those swell-tasting Grape Nuts Flakes because their whole wheat energy starts going to work for you in just 2 minutes after you eat a big, malty-rich bowlful. That's energy you need for most everything you do during the day. And you'll like sugar-roasted Grape Nuts Flakes. They have a flavor that's malty-rich, makes them mighty good to eat. So if you want to be king of the cowboys in your corral, ask your mom to get you Grape Nuts Flakes, the great 2-minute energy cereal.
Grape Nuts Flakes is one of the triple wrap post cereals, guaranteed fresh or triple your money back.
A wonderful little girl drops in on Roy, Dale, and Pat at the Eureka Cafe. A broken, confused man is accused of robbery. And the holiday hunting trip on which our cowboy friends were planning so excitedly seems to have suffered a further postponement, for it's the day before Christmas now.
Roy, I hope this ain't a wild goose chase. Oh, it's too bad we couldn't pick up those tracks this morning.
Yeah, if that char hadn't come along. Well, we can't let an innocent man stay in jail if we can help it. Jim Gorman's all right, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Say, do you know anything about this Daniels fellow, Pat?
No, except that he and his buddy leased this place about 10 days ago. Dale remembered that she'd seen him on a black horse a couple of times and then on a gray.
Well, a gray horse was stolen from near Zenith last week. Of course, Daniels may be able to prove he's owned the gray he rides for years, and in that case, I wouldn't know what to do next except go hunting.
Well, we'll soon find out. Who there?
Who, Trigger? Steady, boy. Who?
Hey, there's that Daniels fella out by the barn. He don't look much like a rancher, does he?
No, he doesn't. And if he expects to run a big place like this,
what's up there, strangers? Oh, hello. You're Rogers and Brady, aren't you?
We sure are, Mr. Daniels.
Well, I suppose you came out to pay a little pre-Christmas call. Come on in the house.
Well, we haven't got time for that, Mr. Daniels.
We heard you moved in here with a fine gray horse, and, well, maybe he's for sale.
Well, yes, I do have a gray horse, and he might be for sale. At a price, though. He isn't the most tractable animal I've ever known, but he's a beauty, all right. Come on. He's in the barn.
Well, I'm sorry we haven't gotten over to call on you before, Mr. Daniels. I've been pretty busy around my own spread trying to get things cleared up so Pat and I could take a little hunting trip.
Oh, that's all right. Lots of time for visiting. I expect to be around these parts for a long time. Well, here we are. Yeah. There he is, the gray ghost in person.
Hey, he's quite an animal. I don't blame you for being proud of him. Had him long?
Raised him from a colt. When I saw the little fellow standing at his mother's side, that dappled gray hide gleaming in the sunlight, I knew he was the horse for me.
I guess there's something you didn't know, though, Daniels.
What's that?
That a gray colt isn't born gray. They're solid black, except for some hairs on their mane and tail. You stole this horse, didn't you?
Look, you can't talk to me like that, Rogers. I can prove I own him.
And I can prove that you were in the general store in Mineral City last night, after hours.
What? What are you talking about?
One of the teeth is broken off the rowel on your right spur, and I've got a hunch it's going to match...
Long! Help!
Oh, no, you don't, Daniels. Don't move. Don't reach for those guns.
Long! Long!
Let me get in on this, Roy.
I'm coming, Daniels.
Hey, look out, Roy. Up in the hay mow there.
I see him. Oh. That'll hold him for a second. Here, Pat, you handle Daniels.
Hey, look out, Long. Pull up the ladder.
I don't need a ladder to get up there.
That was some jump, Roy. Now pull yourself up.
I'm here, Pat. Now you with the rifle.
Don't. We'll fall over the edge.
That isn't so far. I jumped up here without too much trouble.
Let me go. I don't know anything about the general store robbery.
Oh, no? Sounds to me like you do. And when you wake up, you can tell the sheriff about it. How are you coming, Pat?
I'm coming fine, but you sure can't say the same about Daniels.
Nice going, Pat. Now let's get these two tied up and into Mineral City. We want to get started on our hunting trip before dark. We'll have to hurry.
Yeah, we sure will. Because we still have to bring Jess's father out from town to the Double R Bar, too.
Yeah, Dale and Jess will be getting anxious. Let's go.
But I thought Daddy was coming back with you, Roy. And it's dark already.
Well, he and Pat will be here any minute, honey. They had a couple of errands to do.
Okay. Come on, boy. Let's play. Oh, I wish I had a dog like you.
Roy, are you sure everything is all right?
You bet it is, Dale. The sheriff wanted to talk to Jim about a job he can get for him. So I figured I'd just mosey back to see how you and Jess were making out.
Oh, we've had a wonderful day, Roy. I guess the Eureka isn't going to be open for Christmas Eve, but shucks, there probably wouldn't have been any business anyway.
Roy, what's this thing over here in the corner?
Well, that's my guitar.
Oh, do you make music on it?
Well, sort of.
Oh, here. Play me a song.
All right, honey.
Sing me one, too.
Jess, you've had a busy day here on the ranch. Why don't you climb up here in my lap and kind of rest for a minute till your daddy gets here,
Okay, I like it on your lap.
Something sort of soft and nice, huh, Roy?
Sure. How's this?
Close your sleepy eyes, my little buckaroo. While the light of western skies is shining down on you. Don't you know it's time for bed? Another day is through. So go to Don't you realize, my little buckaroo, it was from a little acorn that the oak tree grew. And remember that your dad was once a kid like you. So go to sleep, my little buckaroo. Gonna ride the reins like grown-up cowgirls do. Now it's time that you were rounding up a dream or two. So go to sleep, my little buckaroo.
Jess took the song to heart, Roy. My, but she's had a busy day.
Good. Pat and I didn't get much hunting done, but maybe one day will be enough for us, if we can ever get going.
Well, it looks like you can start right now.
Well, sir, here we are. There she is, Jim.
Jess, I'm sorry I was so long, but
she's asleep.
No, I'm not. I was just dressing. Why don't you sit here and hold me a while, Daddy?
Gosh, do you mind, Roy and Dale?
Well, I should say not. You just sit here and enjoy the fire, and when Jess is ready to go to bed, there's room all set for both of you.
Roy, you and me got things to do, so let's get started.
All right.
I think I'll just walk outside with you for a couple of minutes.
I'll talk to you before we leave, Jim. Everything all right?
Fine, Roy. I'd like to talk to you, too. Let's try to say thanks.
Daddy, we have the most wonderful animals around here.
Boy, it's sure a fine night to head for the hills, isn't it, Pat?
Golly, yes. Only there's one little errand I ought to do. You know, they had some dandy tin jeeps, just like Nellybell in the general store, and they're going to be open late tonight, and I just thought
Well, as long as you're going into town, maybe I can ride in with you.
Dale, I figure as long as you weren't going to open up tonight, maybe you'd like to ride over to Bob Nemeth's ranch with me for a few minutes and...
Oh? What for?
Well, they had a litter of puppies over there about 7 weeks ago, and I thought I'd go over and get one. You know, sort of a little surprise for Jess when she wakes up in the morning.
Oh, all right, Roy.
Ought to time out just about right.
And then the three of us can meet back here and head for the mountains.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not going cougar hunting with you two characters.
Well, I didn't mean way up in the mountains, Dale. We'll say about 2,500 feet up in the foothills. There's some real nice little fir trees growing, and I thought if we went up and got a nice one, it'd be fun to watch Jess in the morning.
Oh, yes.
Well, shucks, Pat, we can go cougar hunting any time.
Oh, yeah, sure can. Well, I think tree hunting's a much better idea. Wow. Aren't those stars bright tonight?
They sure are. Hey, look at that big one right overhead. I don't remember seeing that one before.
Gosh, that is a nice one. I don't remember seeing it either.
You don't? You've never noticed that star before?
No.
Why, that's been there for ages. People saw it for the first time almost 2,000 years ago.
Well, it's Christmas, and I'll bet a lot of you thought today would never roll around. Christmas always seems to take a long time coming, but it sure is worth waiting for, isn't it, Dale?
I'll say it is, Roy. And I just hope all of our friends are having as fine a day as we are. I can see that Pat agrees.
I sure do, Dale. And speaking for all the gang here at the ranch, we hope Christmas brought you folks everything you wished for.
Yes, and we hope that Santa left your stockings just bulging with good things. But the best wish we have for you is for the true spirit of Christmas to stay with you all through the year. You know, the spirit of giving is a good thing to have with you all the time.
and peace on earth, goodwill toward men, is well worth keeping in mind every single day of the year. I know you all agree with me on that. And now our sponsor, Post Cereals, who bring you Great Nuts Flakes, Sugar Crisp, and so many other good cereals, join Dale, Pat, and all of us here at the ranch in sending you best wishes for the holiday season. Yes, from our Post family to your family, Merry, Merry Christmas and the happiest New Year ever. And for now, goodbye, good luck, and may the good Lord take a liking to you. See you next week.
Featured in today's cast were Frank Hemingway, Herb Butterfield, Dorothy Brown, Ken Peters, and Stan Farrar. This is Art Ballinger speaking for Post Great Nuts Flakes. Stay tuned for the latest news brought to you by Log Cabin Syrup.
That is the Roy Rogers Show from Christmas of 1952 with The Night Before the Night Before Christmas.